The headlines: Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow, saying the U.S. seeks to discredit Russia's leadership. A new report says hundreds of Native American children have died in U.S. state-run boarding schools due to physical abuse and other forms of punishment. And Iran's foreign minister says people in West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's relations with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Hello and welcome, everybody. Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow. Sergei Nurishkin said the U.S. encourages the spreading of fake information on the popular Telegram messaging service. He said the U.S. seeks to discredit and, quote, dehumanize Russia's political and military leadership in the eyes of Russian people. Nurishkin also compared the U.S. State Department to the infamous Nazi propaganda machine run by Joseph Goebbels. The U.S. State Department rejected the Russian officials' quote, incredibly ironic statements. The department accused Moscow of long-standing state-sponsored disinformation and propaganda efforts. Ratzad Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad al-Thani is in Tehran at the invitation of Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi. The two officials will hold a meeting followed by a press conference in the coming hours. Meetings with other senior Iranian officials are also on the agenda of the Qatari Emir's one-day visit. The enhancement of bilateral ties as well as major regional and international issues of concern will be at the heart of the discussions. Al-Thani last visited Tehran in January 2020. Russia has imposed sanctions on over 30 EU, U.S. and Singaporean energy companies in retaliation for Western bans on Moscow. The blacklisted firms include Gazprom Germania, a former subsidiary of Russia's major gas exporter Gazprom, Europol Gaz, which owns the Polish part of the Yamal Europe gas pipeline, is also among sanctioned companies. The sanctions include a ban on transactions and the entry into Russian ports of vessels linked to the affected companies. The list published by Russia doesn't provide further details of the sanctions. Under a presidential decree issued earlier this month, no Russian entity is allowed to make deals with sanctioned parties or fulfill its obligations under existing agreements. The U.S. and its allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions against Moscow in response to the war in Ukraine. Russia had repeatedly warned that it would retaliate for the Western sanctions in kind. EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen leveling some harsh criticism at Russia and calling it a big threat to international order.
And this brings me to Russia. It is today the most direct threat to the world order, with a barbaric war against Ukraine and its worrying pact with China and their call for new and very much arbitrary international relations.
The European Commission chief was speaking after meeting Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, along with European Council President Charles Michel. Kishida also said the Ukraine war is not just a matter that concerns Europe, but that it shakes the core of the international order, including Asia. The top EU officials are in Tokyo for an annual round of talks that come with much of the international community rallying to pressure Moscow over the Ukraine war. Finland is expediting its plans to join NATO. The country says it will apply for membership without delay. President Sauli Niinisto and Prime Minister Sanna Marin have said in a statement that the national steps needed to make the decision will be taken rapidly over the next few days. A special committee will announce Finland's formal membership bid on Sunday. Foreign Minister Pekka Haavisto says Finland's accession to NATO will strengthen security in the Baltic Sea region. Sweden is also likely to follow suit. Sources inside the EU say NATO allies are expecting Finland and Sweden to be granted membership quickly. Russia has repeatedly warned the two European Union member states against the bid. It sees NATO enlargement as a direct threat to its own security. The European Commission proposes to establish a new EU agency to tackle the growing problem of child sex abuse in the 27-nation bloc. Unveiling the plans, the Commission says reports of such abuse in the EU have increased by 6,000% during the past decade. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Many believe the crime of sexually abusing a child is even more heinous than murder. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, says 85 million child sex abuse videos and images were identified by the bloc's authorities last year, a record number.
In the EU, the reports related to the European Union, the member states, have increased with 6,000% the last 10 years. Why is this increasing? Of course, nobody knows for sure.
The Commission says it's not known exactly why these crimes are on the rise, but analysts say the EU has been allowed to expand too quickly, with some nations harbouring criminal gangs.
And now, of course, thanks to or due to open borders, are these criminal networks, they started to flourish and integrate further.
The EU Commission is proposing to establish a new agency designed to prevent child sex abuse and support victims.
At least one in five children falls victim to sexual violence during childhood in Europe. So these numbers are really embarrassing.
Anti-trafficking agencies say 2 million children recently entered the EU having fled the conflict in Ukraine, many of them unaccompanied. Gangs and individuals see an opportunity for exploitation.
The police and child protection services need to work together, plus they need to work together across borders, and there need to be better information sharing platforms.
The European Commission has a message for predators.
We are coming for you.
But critics are asking why more has not been done up to now. Given that it promotes itself as a project designed to protect and improve the lives of citizens, rights groups say this issue seriously undermines the credibility of the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A new report shows more than 500 Native American children have died in U.S. government-run boarding schools over a period of more than a century. The Department of Interior's report says indigenous children were exposed to physical abuse, food denial, and other forms of punishment in state-run boarding schools. It says the school system pursued the twin goals of cultural assimilation and territorial dispossession of indigenous people through relocation of their children. The study identified more than 400 such schools operating in the U.S. for 1.5 centuries, starting in the early 19th century. There are also more than 50 marked or unmarked burial sites. The deaths of 500 indigenous students were attributed to only 19 schools that have been investigated so far. The department says further investigation may increase the number of student deaths to thousands or even tens of thousands. Many families in the U.S. are facing a severe shortage of baby formula, which has sent them on a desperate hunt for the vital supplies. The shortage is particularly impacting mothers who cannot breastfeed and those whose children cannot tolerate other nutrition sources. Many mothers are watering down formula or rationing it. The problem is worse for mothers who lack health insurance or work at low-wage jobs with little opportunity to breastfeed. The situation got worse on February 17th when manufacturer Abbott recalled formula made at its Michigan factory. According to the data collection agency, DataAssembly, 43% of the usual formula was out of stock across the U.S. last month. And to the United States, there are coastline fires burning across nearly 80 hectares of land in the state of California. At least 20 homes have been destroyed in the city of Laguna Niguel in Orange County. Cold winds coming from the Pacific Ocean pushed the blaze up a rugged canyon, sending embers into homes and sparking spot fires in some areas. Several homes at the tip of the canyon are on fire, with smoke coming from numerous other homes deeper in the neighborhood. The flames have been fueled by winds from the desert as well as strong gusts from the Pacific Ocean. Iran's foreign minister says people in the West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's ties with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a meeting with visiting Lebanese culture minister Mohammad Wissam al-Murtada in Tehran. The top Iranian diplomat added that the resistance of the Lebanese people in the face of Israel's frequent acts of aggression is a brilliant model for other regional nations. He said Tehran is ready to boost economic cooperation with Beirut despite the cruel Western sanctions. Al-Murtada, for his part, said Lebanon is prepared to expand relations with all friendly countries in the region, especially Iran. Israeli forces kill a reporter working for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network in the occupied West Bank. Shireen Abu Akleh was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid on the city of Jenin. She was a veteran Palestinian reporter for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel. Palestinians have gathered in the city of Ramallah to pay tribute to her. Israeli officials say Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Akleh was also shot in the back, calls the Israeli claim an outright lie.
Palestinian reporter Shireen Abu Akleh was shot while covering an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The veteran reporter who worked for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel was shot in the face by Israeli forces despite wearing a blue flak jacket clearly marked with press. Israeli officials claim Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Akleh, who was also shot in the back, rejected the Israeli claim as a lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Al Jazeera also said Abu Akleh was assassinated in cold blood and urged the international community to hold Israeli forces responsible. The Palestinian Authority said Abu Akleh's killing is a heinous crime and part of the occupation's policy of targeting journalists to obscure the truth and commit crimes silently. In Gaza, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas described the killing as a new crime against journalism in Palestine, while the Islamic Jihad movement branded it an unsuccessful attempt to cover up realities. The journalist's murder also drew widespread condemnation from countries across the world, such as Iran, Pakistan, and Belgium. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, called Abu Akleh's killing a deliberate and criminal act. The United Nations called for an immediate and thorough investigation and for those responsible to be held accountable, a request that was echoed by the European Union.
We immediately called for a swift and independent investigation so that the perpetrators of this terrible crime can be brought to justice.
The International Federation of Journalists said it would submit Abu Akleh's case to the International Criminal Court. Abu Akleh's murder is just the tip of the iceberg of crimes committed by Israel against journalists. Reporters Without Borders say nearly 150 Palestinian journalists have been wounded by Israeli forces across the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since 2018. Israeli strikes also destroyed a building housing local offices of media outlets during its last year's war on Gaza. Such atrocity, along with frequent raids and shootings in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, show that the Israeli regime has no scruples about murdering unarmed Palestinians. The silence of the international community is also seen as a green light for Israel to continue such crimes.
Journalist and political commentator Marwa Osman says the Israeli regime's killing of a veteran Al Jazeera journalist was a horrendous act reminiscent of Israel's previous crimes.
Well, it was definitely horrifying, especially because the first thing that my eyes caught very early in the morning yesterday was the video of the assassination of Shireen Abu Akleh, and it was beyond horrific. It brought back memories from the 2006 war and the 1996 war, the Israeli war against Lebanon, against my friends and my family and my community and my country, and especially seeing a journalist like Shireen, who we literally grew up watching on Al Jazeera, covering all the occupation's aggression against the Palestinian people all over the 1948 territories and in Al-Quds and the West Bank and Ramallah and basically everywhere where the aggression of the occupation touched Palestinian lives. So it was beyond horrific, it was inhumane, and it was a targeted assassination. It cannot be explained other than a targeted assassination of a journalist doing her job, presenting the truth to the people.
Palestine's UN envoy says Arab countries at the UN have called for an independent international probe into Israel's killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh.
The Arab group in New York adopted a statement condemning in the strongest possible term this criminal act by the Israeli occupying authorities and demanding an international independent investigation on this crime and to take those who are responsible for this crime to face accountability regarding these crimes. Of course, you know, my colleague, the mission of
Riyad Mansour said the demand for the probe into, quote, the assassination of the journalist was sent in identical letters to the UN Chief Antonio Guterres, the Security Council, and the General Assembly's president. Meanwhile, the Office of UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet also called for an independent and transparent investigation into the incident. Bachelet's office said it's appalled at the killing of the journalist. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Mask mandates are being lifted in many countries. Testing and surveillance have decreased, and traveling is recommencing widely. People are understandably exhausted and want to forget about the pandemic. This would be a grave mistake. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by William Rivers Pitt, journalist. This article is published under the heading 100 million new COVID infections could be just months away. Here's more. Recently, The Lancet dropped an editorial titled COVID-19, The Next Phase and Beyond. It read, after living for more than 2 years with COVID-19, with over 6.2 million confirmed deaths, but probably many more, with an estimated 20 million excess deaths and over 510 million confirmed cases, the world is at a critical point. The Omicron wave, with its high transmissibility and milder course than previous variants, especially for people who are fully vaccinated and without comorbidities, is abating in many countries.
Restrictions are being relaxed and people are slowly returning to pre-pandemic activities, including gatherings, office-based working, and cultural events. Mask mandates are being lifted in many countries. Testing and surveillance have decreased and traveling is recommencing widely. People are understandably exhausted and want to forget about the pandemic. This would be a grave mistake. Now is not the time to turn away from COVID-19 or rewrite history. It is time to vigorously engage, redouble efforts to end the acute phase of the pandemic in 2022 for all, and lay strong, sustainable foundations for a better future with clear accountabilities and honest acceptance of uncomfortable truth. That represents a full 50% increase in infections from 2 weeks ago. Although deaths and hospitalizations remain down, thankfully, the acute phase of infection has not ended. Yet, incredible short-sightedness in the U.S. has hamstrung testing to the point that Americans could very well be in the midst of a full-blown surge and not have any idea how bad it is or how bad it could get. That 70,000 number, thanks to the U.S. collapsed testing regime, is almost certainly a low estimate. Delta, then Omicron, then BA1, then BA2, then BA2.12.1, and now BA4 and BA5, all variants and subvariants from the original form, each inching closer to eviscerating the rapidly diminishing protections offered by multiple rounds of vaccine shots. Eric J. Topol, professor of molecular medicine at the Scripps Research, warns, "The virus that brought us COVID-19 is now going through accelerated evolution. Our vaccines must do the same." Short vision, this vital funding appears prepared to go exactly as nowhere as the last White House request for COVID help. The Biden administration is preparing for the possibility that 100 million Americans, roughly 30% of the population, will get infected with the coronavirus this fall and winter, reports the New York Times, adding, "The 100 million figure, which the official described as a median of what could be expected, also assumes a lack of federal resources if Congress does not approve any more money for tests, therapeutics, and vaccines, and that many vaccinated and previously infected people would become infected again." In November of 2020, Ori Friedman wrote for The Atlantic, "The United States, with its diversified economy, cutting-edge scientific innovation, and numerous other resilience-oriented attributes, might have been expected to cope particularly well with a pandemic, but COVID-19 has exposed the U.S. vulnerabilities, all-encompassing political polarization, debilitating economic and healthcare inequality, a president who has downplayed the threat of the virus and rejected scientific guidance, and decades-long drive to optimize the economy and society for efficiency, not resilience, and a national creed of individualism, optimism, and exceptionalism that has rendered the U.S. resistant to learning from other countries." 17 months later, The Lancet, along with vaccine experts and the Biden White House, are warning a top voice that Americans have to date failed to adequately cope with the challenge posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. The virus is changing every day, yet the U.S. continues to react to it with half measures and foggy assumptions that the worst is behind them. Americans are one cruel variant away from falling back into a terrifying surge of hospitalizations.
one leg. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Shireen Abu-Akleh, among Arab media's most prominent figures and widely hailed for her bravery and professionalism, who covered the Palestinian cause and Israel's brutality, is no more. Israel has killed her. Yet this is not the first time that a journalist, a Palestinian one, has been killed by Israeli forces. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why Israel believes killing journalists can prevent the truth from coming out when it comes to their crimes in the occupied territories.
Palestinian reporter Shireen Abu-Akleh was shot while covering an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The veteran reporter who worked for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel was shot in the face by Israeli forces despite wearing a blue flak jacket clearly marked with press. Israeli officials claim Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu-Akleh, who was also shot in the back, rejected the Israeli claim as a lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Al Jazeera also said Abu-Akleh was assassinated in cold blood and urged the international community to hold Israeli forces responsible. The Palestinian Authority said Abu-Akleh's killing is a heinous crime and part of the occupation's policy of targeting journalists to obscure the truth and commit crimes silently. In Gaza, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas described the killing as a new crime against journalism in Palestine, while the Islamic Jihad movement branded it an unsuccessful attempt to cover up realities. The journalist's murder also drew widespread condemnation from countries across the world, such as Iran, Pakistan, and Belgium. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, called Abu-Akleh's killing a deliberate and criminal act. The United Nations called for an immediate and thorough investigation and for those responsible to be held accountable, a request that was echoed by the European Union.
We immediately called for a swift and independent investigation so that the perpetrators of this terrible crime can be brought to justice.
The International Federation of Journalists said it would submit Abu-Akleh's case to the International Criminal Court. Abu-Akleh's murder is just the tip of the iceberg of crimes committed by Israel against journalists. Reporters Without Borders say nearly 150 Palestinian journalists have been wounded by Israeli forces across the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since 2018. Israeli strikes also destroyed a building housing local offices of media outlets during its last year's war on Gaza. Such atrocity, along with frequent raids and shootings in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, show that the Israeli regime has no scruples about murdering unarmed Palestinians. The silence of the international community is also seen as a green light for Israel to continue such crimes.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Joining us is Mustafa Barghouti, Palestine Liberation Organization Central Council, who joins us from occupied Ramallah. Also joining us, Richard Becker from the Answer Coalition, who joins us from San Francisco.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Mustafa Barghoutini, let me first start with you. Obviously, this is a very sad day for what has occurred. I'm sure you'll agree, and it's still being felt all across, at a minimum, the occupied territories, and if not, around the world, for people who knew who Abu Akleh was, who was shot the way she was and went out of this life the way she did. Tell us your initial thoughts, especially after you heard what happened, and how you feel now.
Well, we'll feel very sad. I mean, it's not just the group of people who knew Shireen like myself directly for the last 26 years, but the feeling of sadness is across the whole Palestinian population. Shireen Abu Akleh entered every house in Palestine during the last 25 years with her brave and extremely professional reporting of the situation in Palestine. I would say even she probably has entered every Arab house in the region and maybe other countries. And today the feeling of sadness and loss is among all Palestinians. But the other side of the matter is that she was killed in cold blood by an Israeli assassin, by an Israeli sniper. And the whole responsibility of her death lies on the shoulders of the Israeli army, the Israeli government, the Prime Minister of Israel, the Minister of Army in Israel, and all the people who are oppressing the Palestinian people along the situation of occupation and apartheid. Let me tell you that since 2000, 55 journalists, including now Shireen Abu Akleh, have been killed by the Israeli army. It's not a unique incident. It's not an isolated incident. It's a systematic oppression of Palestinian journalists. And as you said, since 2018, 150 of these journalists were injured by the Israeli army. What we demand and what we insist on is accountability. And we insist that the world community stop the system of double standard and eliminate the situation where Israel is not held accountable for its crimes. It's time for Israeli officials to be held accountable. It's time to end the impunity that Israel enjoys all the time. And I would really like specifically to comment on what the UN American representative said. She continued to repeat the Israeli line of talking about an investigation committee which would include the Israelis. This is totally unacceptable. It's like allowing the accused to investigate himself and allowing the person who committed the crime to be the one who decides whether he committed a crime or not. And it's totally unacceptable for us. What we demand is an international independent commission. And we know that Israel has never allowed any international independent commission from coming here and investigating its crimes. What my message to the American side is, just imagine if Shireen Abu Akleh was killed today in Ukraine. Will we hear this hesitant talk about what has happened? Or it will be condemnation after condemnation and consideration that this right. is a serious crime. Well, this double standard must end, and it's time for justice in Palestine, not only for Shireen Abu Akleh, but for the 100,000, not only for Shireen Abu Akleh, but for all the 100,000 Palestinians who have been killed by Israeli forces since 1948.
Okay, well, raised a very good point there. So I'm going to ask you, Richard Becker, what our guest Mustafa Barghouti said, if this was an American reporter who was killed in Ukraine, let's say. What kind of coverage is there sister in San Francisco, Richard Becker, on this in the U.S. media. And, of course, what our guest mentioned there as a valid point.
Well, it's undoubtedly a valid point. And my greetings to your other guest, Mustafa Barghouti. And our condolences, first of all, to the family and many, many friends and admirers of Shireen Abu Akleh. This is a terrible crime. And there's some attention in the media here to it, but nothing like what there would be if, as Mustafa suggests, you know, a very prominent U.S. reporter killed anywhere. Particularly in a conflict that the U.S. was on one side, and those who carried out the crime were on the other side, there would be hysteria in the media, quite frankly. And there's no question. There apparently were two shots fired, according to her colleague, who was seriously wounded with a shot in the back. One shot hit him, and then the next shot hit her. These aren't random shots. These are sniper assassinations or attempted assassination in the case of a colleague. And the fact that at the UN, we have the U.S. ambassador continuing to really echo and to regurgitate what's coming out of the occupation, out of the Israeli occupiers, it shows the complete bankruptcy of the pretensions that the U.S. has to be any kind of a broker in this struggle, or calling it that it's seeking real justice. It's not. The Israelis will cover this up, I believe, as they've covered up so much else. And the U.S. will support them in covering it up, I believe, as they have so many times before. I want to mention that one reference point, when the Great March of Return happened in Gaza, in which the Palestinians were demonstrating to bring the Palestinian issue back to center of world attention, really. And the demonstrations, I think in all those demonstrations, there were two or three Israelis, and this was over months. One was killed and a couple others who suffered some kind of injury. But on the Palestinian side, there were at least 271 killed and 30,000 who were injured and wounded by the Israeli forces. And the Palestinians are in a position where they could do very little, except, I think, very heroically demonstrate that there must be an end to the occupation. And the Israeli general who had been in charge, the Israeli commander who had been in charge, later said, of all those wounds, all the bullets that killed, the bullets that led to amputations and other lifelong injuries to people, he said, we knew where every bullet went. Something to keep in mind today.
Let's open that up, Mustafa Barghouti, because still, when you sift through the online media posts, there are still many who say that it was Israel is in the right and that there should be an investigation. And some are blaming some. Israel has come out saying that this is Palestinian gunfire that may have been the cause. But let's break this open a little bit and use your expertise in the matter. Because when you take a look at the facts, I mean, this is a very well-known reporter. I'm sure she has been on the Israeli radar for quite some time because she's covered the occupied territories. And in particular, where she was, Jenin. Jenin is an area where Palestinians have been known to be very outspoken when it comes to the Israeli regime in terms of how they've protested and voiced their anger. It almost makes it look like whoever from the Israeli side shot her would be aware of who she is, especially when there was nothing going on around her at the time. And of course, based on the fact that she has reported so much. Do you think that this was something, I don't want to say premeditated, but was on the minds of whoever shot the trigger, knowing who she was?
I don't know if the one who, the Israeli who assassinated her knew exactly who she was, or he was just shooting all the journalists in the area to terrorize them and prevent them from bringing the truth about the reality, especially that we know that it seems that the Israeli army was planning a vicious attack again on Jenin camp. But also there are some other facts. I mean, Shireen was one of the main reporters who reported the massacre in Jenin camp 20 years ago. when the Israeli army reinvaded every city and every part of the West Bank. And she was well known for reporting in a very objective and professional manner all the other crimes that were committed against Palestinians. So yes, she was a target for sure, but all the journalists were a target. And what happened today is already well documented. There wasn't only one or two shootings. Actually, there were several shots. And if you watch the tapes, you can hear them. And the first shot injured Ali Samoudi, who is the partner correspondent with Shireen. And she screamed that he was shot because she saw it. And then immediately she fell down after being shot in the head. So, and then when her other, when a third reporter was there, was tried to move, they shot at her. And when a fourth person came to help Shireen, who fell down to help evacuate her, he was also shot at. So you are talking about systematic shooting that took place probably by more than one Israeli soldier. These were probably snipers that were stationed there, as the Israeli army does, before invading the Jenin camp. They spread snipers in different areas so that they would shoot Palestinians who try to maybe stand up to them or try to escape or whatever. The other very important fact is that there were no Palestinian gunmen there, no Palestinian demonstrators, no Palestinian civilians even at all. The only people present in the region were seven journalists, including Shireen Abu Akleh, and the Israeli army with its armored vehicles and soldiers. So it's a very clear picture. I don't think we need even an investigation to find out what has happened, especially that the bullet that was found fragmented and has exploded inside the head of Shireen Abu Akleh, destroying much of her brain. So basically here, this is a very clear crime. This is a very clear act.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. For a second, we lost you, Mustafa Barghouti. Well, we should have known this was going to come, Richard Becker. We should have somehow interpreted what Naftali Bennett said weeks ago, that something of this magnitude would happen. Because when you had that attack, I don't know if you recall, Richard Becker, that happened in Tel Aviv, the resistance act of which you had a Palestinian that took out some lives. Naftali Bennett came out, and I'm going to quote him, and I was surprised after reading what he said after that. Vowing no limit after there were three killed by the Palestinian freedom fighter, or security forces will have full freedom to act, free rein to deal with threats. There are not and will not be limits for this war. We are granting full freedom of action to the army, the Shin Bet, domestic intelligence agency, and all security forces in order to defeat what he calls the terror. And he went on to say, every murderer knows we will find them. Everyone who helps the terrorists should know that they will pay a heavy price. What do you think? I mean, this is something that obviously shows that something like this would have eventually happened. And today is obviously one sign of it.
Well, it's the green light, and the green light has been given over and over and over again. I wanted to mention, I was at the Jenin camp 20 years ago, which Mr. Barghouti mentioned, after the destruction of the camp, the bulldozing of it, and the massacre that took place there. And it's an unbelievable scene to see the whole center of the camp destroyed. And so what we're talking about is the policy. It's not a new policy. There's a new green light, you know, kind of a reminder green light that comes from Bennett. But this has been the policy for decades. This has been the policy, in fact, which the foundation of the State of Israel was built upon. The ethnic cleansing that took place in 1947 and 1948 and 1949 and again in 1967 and at other times as well. That cannot be carried out. The ethnic cleansing cannot be carried out without terror, without violence. And it's never called that in the media here in the U.S. Terror is only used in reference to the Palestinians or those who are resisting, but it was really the creation of the Israeli state and the conquest of the West Bank and the continued occupation has been based on a policy of granting to the military and to the settlers, of course, in the West Bank, the right, the so-called right to carry out unlimited violence, as Bennett put it, unlimited violence against the Palestinian population.
Okay, Mustafa Barghouti, in your capacity, you have been obviously very active throughout the years, and you've highlighted all the actions, the illegalities of the occupation of what many reports have indicated to be an apartheid regime. When you have an incident like this happen, and as you said, you personally knew Shireen, and I'm sure many people who grew up with her, whom either through online statements or even interviews done, have said that we grew up with this lady. How can there be a mobilization of any kind in order to prevent this from happening, in order to have accountability? What avenues need to be taken and what action needs to be taken, in your opinion?
First of all, let me also mention that Shireen Abu Akleh is also an American citizen, in addition to being a Palestinian citizen, which means that the challenge here is also for the American administration and the American establishment. You're talking here about a person who's carrying American citizenship. I mean, I would expect much different kind of behavior if there was equality and if there was if there wasn't this terrible level double standard that is practiced. Now, what needs to be done, in my opinion, we need to mobilize to expose completely the Israeli oppression system. Not just in the case of Shireen Abu Akleh. Shireen Abu Akleh should open the door to investigate all the 55 cases of Palestinian journalists killed since 2000 and maybe before that. It should also open the door to investigate the crimes that were committed against medical personnel. One of my colleagues, who was a young woman, Razan Najjar, 21 years old, a few years ago was shot in the heart while she was providing first aid to injured people in Gaza. I was myself in 96, by the way, exposed to an act of shooting by a sniper in Ramallah, and I got 35 shrapnels that remain in my back. So I know exactly how this experience happens. We need to open up the whole system of oppression to expose it to the world and demand punitive acts. What we should demand are is sanctions against Israeli establishment, sanctions against the system of apartheid. Shireen Abu Akleh fought very bravely to bring the truth to the world, but I think she will continue to fight even after her death. Her spirit will continue to fight for justice. And I think her provides us with an amazing opportunity to really expose the whole Israeli system and demand what Israel deserves, which is a real strong BDS movement, maybe still used against the apartheid system in South Africa.
Okay, unfortunately we're out of time, but thank you so much for that, Mustafa Barghouti, Palestine Liberation Organization Central Council from Ramallah. Thank you. Richard Baker, thank you for your input from the Answer Coalition from San Francisco. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tahwei. It's goodbye until next time.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality, and I am your host, Zainab Askari. In this program, we do a roundtable discussion on the very interesting topics. And today also, we're going to discuss one of the very interesting topics with two of the very special guests. I have with me Siddique on my left side and Fatima on my right side. I would want you guys to introduce yourself. Let's start from Fatima.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. My name is Fatima Peabody. I'm from Southern California, U.S. I've been here in Qom this time a little over 5 years. I studied a little bit at Jamatul Zahra Hawza. Since then, I'm just teaching a little bit of English conversation classes here and there and just attending lectures and my own kind of self-study, enjoying the Qom life.
Well, thank you, Fatima. Nice to meet you. How are you, Siddique? Let's know something about you, too.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Siddique. I am from the UK, specifically London. And I've been in Qom as well for around 5 to 6 years now. And I study in Bint al Huda. My field of specialization is fiqh and usul, which basically deals with jurisprudence, the nitty-gritty of how the rules are derived.
True.
So it's looking at the principles of jurisprudence and the ahkam, the rulings, and how everything is derived from the Quran and Hadith.
Wow.
That's one part of study. And I have an interest in philosophy, so I've done a bit of that on the side, but I never managed to finish it because my normal study takes a lot of time.
Well, I hope you finish that soon, and it's so nice to meet both of you.
Thank you.
Since you're from Hausa, and you studied Hausa too, and I studied Hausa also, so let's discuss spirituality. Sure. What do you think, Fatima? You're sitting on my right hand, and you're from California. How do you define spirituality?
I think spirituality is a very, very complex, deep, and broad topic. Means different things to different people. I think the way they translate it, ma'naviyat, irfan, I mean, it has so many different deep meanings. And I think very, very few real urafa, real teachers exist in the world. I think Ayatollah Behjad and these others were some of the very few in our time, no longer with us. And I just think that, especially where I'm from, I don't know about UK, and I think UK is similar to US too. Their education is a little bit better than ours, but the rest of the world I don't know as much about as in US the most, where I'm born and raised. The people are very in a rush. They're very, very hungry for spirituality, but they have no patience.
All right.
Whether it's Muslims or non-Muslims, I think majority. very, very few, or some of them attached to false teachers. There's a big, big problem with this in the West where people are claiming to be able to teach spirituality, but they really don't know it. They're misguiding people. I think it's a big problem in other places. So it's really unfortunate. So people that are so hungry and thirsty, myself included, I was one of those my whole childhood, teenage, 20s, everything. Irfan, spirituality, we're so excited for this. But then if your soul is not ready for it, you're not really going to progress. You're not going to get anywhere. You have to have, I think, number one, real, real teachers, real solid knowledge in the books. Like, you have to have a prior Islamic research and studying of the basic Islamic sciences, like all the wajibat and all of the Arabic and, usul and fiqh and all of these things that might not be as exciting. You have to get a background in that very deeply and real teachers. Otherwise, it's not going to,
work out for you.
Yeah, so I just... I'm not really pursuing that as much anymore because I feel like I'm not ready for it. I have to have, and I had a lot of other personal problems. I have to have, you have to have a real teachers for that. So, but I think if you have a real teachers and you're ready for it and you can progress in it and you can, read about it, especially first Islamic philosophy background and reading about all the great spiritual masters and people, if you can really find a good teachers that you're ready for it, and you can do it, then I think it's really good to go on it. But I think majority of people are not ready for it, and majority of people
cannot find.
These teachers just don't accept everyone. Like Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah, he was one of the highest urafa. I mean, his teachers were first only specific. They didn't accept specific people. And then we have the whole thing of the Sufism, mysticism, tasawwuf. That's totally different. Some of them claiming to be Shia, majority Sunni. They're a little bit similar to urafa, but doing different things. So it's very broad. It's very broad. And I just think it's just sad. It's one of the saddest things that in the West, people are so hungry for this, but they just don't have, they can't find, there's just not enough teachers. And so they kind of, either they don't find it or they go in these wrong cults. They have a lot of cults and these fake teachers. So I think it's very, you have to be very careful for that. And, I think just as if we can just stay away from haram and just sticking to the halal and the wajibs things, and we can pure. The first step, somebody told me it was really nice. The first step is really self-purification. If we, the tazkiyat an-nafs, if we can just focus and try to do that as much as we can and all the wajibs and as much mustahab as we can, then Allah will send,
all the obligatory
help us
things and all the recommended.
If we can't even do that, then we're not even going to get close to that. The first thing is the self-purification.
Self-purification. Let's go to Siddiqa. We'll be back after a short while.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Siddiqa, what's your take on that?
I agree with a few points, but also disagree with a few points.
Wow.
So I'll start off with the agree. Yes,